May I speak to you in the name of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Please be seated. So, was Mary a bit crazy? A serious question, actually. I mean, I take as my point of departure, reference, the Magnificat, beautiful paraphrase of which we just sang at least a part of it. But in the biblical text, if you'll read it this afternoon or sometime during this week, you will hear Mary sing or poetically exclaim, and the whole thing is written in beautiful Greek poetry, that the Lord has done, past tense, great things for her. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit about Mary's incredible contribution, intelligence, and strength in a minute. But first, we've got this little bit of ground clearing to do. Was she crazy? I mean, we remind ourselves that Mary was a girl from the lower classes of Israelite society. She finds herself pregnant outside of any kind of safe social arrangement. If Joseph, after some convincing, hadn't taken hold of his responsibility and been there to help, she'd have been all on her own in an incredibly hostile environment for an unwed teenager. And she probably was mid to late teens. We're not exactly sure, but that is when most people got married, or at least women got married in that time. If this happened in our culture, we would still be thinking, oh my goodness, you know, that's reality for Mary, and her life has gone off the rails. And we'd wag our heads and think, oh, what's going to happen to her? But here she is saying in the past tense that God has already ended injustice and oppression. And if you read the poem, It's for the nations, it's for Israel and for the nations by extension, and it's for her. I mean, all Mary has to do is look around to see massive evidence to the contrary. So again, is she crazy? Now, you might be thinking, is Dirksen crazy? Doesn't he remember the angel? Okay, there are angelic appearances. But from all the evidence we have, these do not on their own. We just have to reference Zechariah's previous experience, bring the kind of complete clarity or confidence one would imagine. Later on, Paul will write in one of his first letters, the letter to the Galatians, that angels aren't really a kind of knock-dead proof that you're looking for when it comes to God. There he says, even if we or an angel from heaven should preach to you a gospel contrary to the one we preach to you, let him be accursed. Now, this presumably because there were some early would-be followers of either the Jewish way or followers of Jesus who were claiming some sort of angelic sanction. Now, whatever we make of angels, and I actually know a few people who are very credible to me, who claim to have experienced something like an angelic appearance to them, whatever we make of all of that, and they are certainly incredibly important in Luke's writing of this, the early part of his gospel, they are not the ground on which Mary's faith stands. Perhaps it is, then, what she has just experienced in our gospel reading today. Mary comes to Elizabeth to support her. She's a woman who has not expected to ever be pregnant, and is, and she needs some help, so she calls her niece, and her niece comes to live with her for several months to help her, to make sure everything is going well. And when Mary walks in the door, Elizabeth equates her, astoundingly, with the woman the prophet Micah writes about in our first reading, the one who will go into labor and give birth to the one who will set all things right. Blessed are you. The word blessed is repeated several times among women. Now, combined with what the angel has already said to Mary at the Annunciation, these words together are incredibly powerful. So perhaps that's where her confidence lies. But you know, words are words, right? Words are words. And what Mary would see about her, what she would be experiencing, would clash with those words. There's evidence of Rome everywhere. I mean, you just have to go outside the city walls, any major city in Judea at the time, and you would see Roman soldiers erecting crosses. For Israelite citizens, to see crucifixions was actually fairly common. You would have experienced the financial pain of double taxation, Rome's oppressive taxes, and then Israel's leaders' oppressive taxes. And so for many people, that equated not only to the financial pain, but hunger pains. Real, actual hunger. Everything was always on a knife edge. And so the clash between these words spoken to Mary and what her senses scream at her must have been intense. Now, part of our struggle, I think, is just needing to come to grips with the grammar. That sounds pretty boring, right? With the grammar of the Greek. In English, we normally say stuff like, I was at the mall doing my shopping, past tense, or I'm at the mall doing my shopping, present tense, or I will go to the mall on Christmas Eve because I love doing my shopping during the mad rush. Future. Now, with the Omicron variant afoot, that might not be happening this year for many of us, although I'm sure some people will still do it. But there you have it, past, present, and future tenses. But when translating from the New Testament, English scholars have to wrestle with the fact that Greek doesn't just have these tenses, it has something called the aorist tense, which Mary's beautiful poetry is couched in. And the aorist tense sounds like the simple past. And so we can't really see this other implication within it. So God has acted. God has remembered me, his lowly servant. God has brought down mighty kings. God has lifted up the humble and the lowly. But within that past tense, there's always future potential. It's the already that has happened, and the not yet that can be banked on because of what has happened in the past. Now, this is kind of hard for us to get our minds wrapped around, but it's actually the tense that helps us understand what Christian faith is. Christian faith rests on the fact that how God has acted in the past will be how God continues to act. God the Creator has acted to reconcile the creation. That work has begun, as all the prophets testify, and it will continue. And so this helps us understand Mary. She's not under some emotional swoon as she responds to Elizabeth. Not that there's anything wrong with emotional swoons or emotions. I'm not saying that. But she is, at this point, as she's responding to Elizabeth's greeting in the words of the Magnificat, she's a person expressing an intelligent faith in the God revealed to Israel. It means she's literate, actually. And not just literate, but deeply taught and committed as a teenager of the lower classes, if you will. She's as articulate as any of the great prophets, which is really astounding. She basically helps us understand that Christian faith, that actually Jewish faith and Christian faith, is not faith in any one moment, any spectacular happening, be that angelic or otherwise, but it's a belief that God's actions, not just words about God, not words we say about God, things we know from history, but that God's actions can be trusted to be kind of an ongoing event in history. And so we would say that our faith is a faith in God's faithfulness. That's the heart of the Christian gospel. Now, it very well may be the case that God needed to choose one of the unwashed billions from among the vast majority of human beings that have ever lived, who have tromped on this soil, commoner, a poor person, a waif, if you will, someone who would have never been noticed otherwise, and that's probably all part of the amazing plan of God. But as long as we just remember that this commoner was not common in her faith, in this poetry we see someone who is no mere recipient of an action that she has no control over. The exemplar, then, of kind of a female humility. Someone whom the church has sought to domesticate under a halo of perpetual virginity. But a person who is wrestling with the enormity of what God is doing in her. Someone who is coming in a kind of real-time way. We can all actually read it as it unfolds for us in the text to self-awareness and confidence. And it's actually unparalleled in ancient literature. We never see a woman expressing this kind of confidence, this kind of belief in any other place. And all the while she's doing it, she is saying it in this perfectly balanced aorist tense in which she understands God's actions in Israel past to be something that will continue to faithfully unfold in the future. And so she's definitely not crazy, though the line between crazy and faith sometimes can seem razor thin. She's actually this exemplar of us, of what it means to respond to God's astounding work of joining us in the flesh. She experienced the promised Christ inside of her so that you and I can now say Christ in us, the hope of glory. As Mary shows us, it's never a matter of God doing the work alone. It's always a matter of a covenant relationship, God initiating and we who respond. God enters the world in this dramatic, though largely hidden way that will change everything, but for that change to affect everything, it will take people like Mary, like you and I, to proclaim and to own the type of faith that she has. A faith that is not just proclaiming a past event, though it is a past event, nor is it merely proclaiming a future utopia. It is a past event that will become a future reality as we live into it now. And so Christ's incarnation, Christ becoming flesh, and then doing all that Christ will do on the cross, in the resurrection, entirely sufficient to reconcile all things and make them new, as Hebrews says to us this morning. All of these things are couched in the past tense. All human injustices and oppressions and challenges are dealt with by Christ. But as finite beings, as everyday Marys and Johns and Josephs, we can never be transformed all at once. Never. We could never contain it. Indeed, it's this hope that somehow we'll just find the magic cure, that it'll all be fixed yesterday, that's ever been our problem. It's the desire to have a special experience, maybe an angelic experience, and everything will be all right. The two original beings, Adam and Eve, standing in for all of us, that's what they wanted. They wanted to have it all. They wanted to master it all now, and found themselves further adrift, separated from what they actually wanted. And so, in order for God's infinite love and faithfulness to be joined to us, finite creatures who learn on the go, slowly, God needs to work gradually with us. Yes, God works for us, but it's always in us and through us as we can handle it. Mary gets it. And so we learn from this common yet one-of-a-kind teenage woman that it is faith in this way of God that will help us live with uncertainty, will help us with hope as we birth children, as she did, as we slog through another winter of this scourge that has attacked us, as we dare to proclaim the great past that is not yet. God with us. Amen.